I would like to talk about communication about food sources and bumblebees using the nest as blackboard and dance floor. And what is communication really good for? And in addition, I was somewhat inspired by Bob Jean's title. So here's a summary of the three topics that I want to cover today. And actually, the last one I'm just going to briefly touch upon. But so I want to talk about bumblebee communication and the fact that I think that there's some redundancy in the communication about food sources, but this redundancy is not redundant, but there are different kinds of different mechanisms of information distribution that might actually serve different purposes. I'm briefly going to talk about honeybee communication and the fact that communicating spatial location of food sources may only be beneficial in some circumstances. And then just at the end, I want to give you some tantalizing hints about the new work that's being done in my lab, and that's all about division of labor. Okay, so I know I'm kind of preaching to the converted here, but I just want to mention briefly that I think it's interesting to study these social networks and interactions in social insects because they might give us hints about how problems like task allocation, information flow, and minimization of delays can be solved in complex systems in general. And so maybe some of these insights that we get can be applied to things like collective robotics, server networks, traffic flow, and similar areas. So I'm going to talk about first communication and bees, and specifically I want to talk about recruitment or communication about food sources in the context of nectar foraging. Now in nectar foraging, bees, let's see if I can get a pointer here. I'm not going to touch it. So you know that nectar foraging in bees is in fact a very risky activity compared to all the other tasks that take place inside the nest. It also carries a high energy cost, and foragers are faced with an extremely variable supply and variable demand for nectar at the nest and supply outside. And so it is probably adaptive for bees or any social insects to find mechanisms that help them find and choose the right resources and allocate the right number of workers to minimize these costs. And so specifically what I'm going to tell you about first is work on Bombus terrestris and Bombus impatiens. What you see here is Bombus impatiens. And you can see that we keep these colonies in the lab and we have them individually numbered so we can tell what the individuals are doing. And when I'm talking about tests for information transfer or how, when I'm testing what information is transferred between bees, I'm using a setup that's similar like this, similar to this in various experiments. So I have a colony that's in a nest box in the lab here, and they have access to a flight arena, and I can let an individual selected numbered forager have access to an additional flight arena that may contain a feeder. And so I can see how this one individual coming back with information to the nest box will influence the behavior of other bees. And now the first finding is that if you have a successful forager foraging during these periods marked here with a blue bar, you see that all the other bees become more active and more potential foragers leave the nest to search for food. And if you look more closely at what this forager is doing when it's returning to the nest, you find that it's performing what we call the waggle. Oops, I'm giving my punchline away here. What we call the bumblebee dance. So this is an actual trace of a bumblebee returning from a successful foraging trip. So they run around excitedly in the nest, sometimes for a long time. Most of this happens after they've unloaded their food into honey pots, so it's not connected to searching for a place to unload. And more of this dancing occurs when food of higher quality is being collected. Now, I'd like to ask you to keep your socks on, but nevertheless, this is awesome but true, and was featured in Ranger Rick's magazine. And in looking even more closely, we wanted to see what the mechanism was by which this information is communicated, and we made hexane extracts of a bunch of different glands and body parts of these bumblebees, and it turns out that an extract from the last two or three tergal glands can cause the same activation of potential foragers from the nest. And this is the location of the Nazanov gland in honeybees, but such a gland structure hasn't been shown in bumblebees, so we think that there is probably a set of single-celled glands located in the same place. Now, in addition, there's another piece of information that's communicated inside the nest, and that's the odor of the food source. So if you train the successful food, the forager that's actually getting food to a particular odor and then test other bees leaving the nest for their odor preference, it turns out that they prefer to go to the same kind of odor. And so in summary, for this part, a successful forager returns to the nest, produces a pheromone from a turgor gland, in addition performs this excited running behavior that's often accompanied by fanning, so it probably serves to distribute the pheromone inside the nest and that activates other bees to leave the nest. However, there are other possible ways in which information can be transmitted, and that's through the honeypots. So when the forager returns, it obviously unloads the nectar into a honeypot. Bumblebees don't do trophallaxis, so there's no direct passing on of samples, but through the honeypots, other bees can sample the food that's being brought in. And it turns out that if you artificially create the situation, if you take a pipette and you fill honey or nectar into honeypots in the nest, that also activates bees. So bees monitor honeypots and they react to influx of high quality nectar by leaving the nest and becoming more active, just like they react to a forager. So what that means is that there are two pathways of information flow, two ways in which bees at the colony can find out whether foraging is currently profitable. One is through this pheromone, the signal, and one is through cues by monitoring amount and influx of nectar in honeypots. And both of these pathways transmit information about food availability and probably about quality. And the lower one, the cues, also communicate information about demand for more nectar. And in advertising, two different words are used for these kinds of information distribution. So the top one, the signal, is called push advertising. That's when somebody comes to your house and he gives you a leaflet in your hand and you can't really escape. So there's the information is delivered to you. On the other hand, there's pull advertising, which is when a company creates a website or something so you can go there and find out information, but if you don't go, you don't get the information. And so these two information flow pathways that the bumblebees use have these two properties, and it's interesting to think about what the benefits of these two kinds of pathways might be. So in my opinion, it's possible that the push information flow is adapted to provide speed in information distribution because there's an immediate signal, whatever you were doing, you get this information. Whereas pull information distribution might be geared more towards effectiveness because a bee returning to the nest unsuccessfully can always go and pick up the information at the exact point that it needs it by monitoring the honeypots. Okay, now secondly, I want to talk a little bit about the differences to honeybees. So honeybees communicate very similar bits of information, but there's one important difference other than the fact that honeybees perform trophallaxis. The other important difference is that bumblebees do not seem to communicate the location of food sources, which honeybees do communicate in the waggle dance. To put it more simply than in the table, this is what the bumblebee dance looks like and what the honeybee dance looks like. So why is this difference there? Well, I created an agent-based model to create some predictions about what conditions would be conducive or what conditions would increase the selection pressure for having a communication signal that includes location information. And it turns out that in this model, the prediction is that the benefits of recruitment, the benefits of communicating where food sources are dependent on the resource distribution. And in fact, with a low number of patches, i.e. a low density of patches and low quality of patches, recruitment benefits increase. So social insect species that evolve in poorer resource environments, according to this model, would be more likely to evolve a recruitment system that involves communicating spatial information. On the other hand, colony size has no bearing in the model on benefits of recruitment. In fact, it doesn't even have bearing on foraging success in general, with or without recruitment. So the variation in foraging success is higher for smaller colonies, but across the four orders of magnitude of colony size that we simulated in the model, there's no effect on the median energy collected with or without recruitment. So small colonies can benefit from communication too, and colony size isn't the reason why bumblebees shouldn't communicate where food sources are, but maybe resource distribution is. So to look at this further and the influence of maybe the environment on benefits of communicating spatial information, we actually performed empirical measurements of benefits of dances in honeybees. So this is an experiment on honeybees where we used manipulated hives in which the combs were horizontal instead of vertical. Now, if you have a horizontal comb, honeybee waggle dances become disoriented and point in random directions. However, if you give the bees a window through which they can either see landmarks or patches of the sky or the sun, then they reorient their dances and even on a horizontal comb are able to point directly to the food source. So in two treatments, both with artificially horizontal combs in honeybees, we can switch on and off the ability of bees to use the waggle dance to communicate locations of food sources. And we did two experiments, one in a very artificial resource-poor environment, only artificial resources were available to the honeybees. And it turns out that the benefits of the dance are very dependent on the distance of food sources. So here we have several runs of the experiment. The orange ones are runs in which the bees are able to dance. They have access to a window. They can dance so that they can see the sun or the sky and they can orient the dances. They can communicate where resources are. And the blue cases, the blue experimental runs, are ones in which the dances are disoriented, so there's no communication of location of food sources. And what you see here is, in just a few runs, that if the food source is only 300 meters away, then there's no big difference between runs where bees were able to use the waggle dance and ones in which the waggle dance was disoriented. However, if the food source is 1,000 meters away, that's 1 kilometer, not quite a mile, then in the runs where the waggle dances were disoriented, there's basically almost no bees arriving at the feeder, whereas in the runs with the waggle dance, plenty of bees do arrive at the feeder. Now, secondly, we wanted to go to natural food sources, and I took great care to select habitats to perform the experiment, which were not manipulated or as little manipulated as possible by humans, so I wanted to have as natural resource distribution as possible. And I selected three habitats, one in Central Europe, one in the Mediterranean, and one in India. And it turns out that the Central European one, it's not without agriculture, but the two cases on the edges are places that have no agriculture at all, that have as natural food distributions as I could find. And there's some interesting differences here. On the y-axis, you see the percent of the days that the experiment ran in which the honeybee hives had weight gains. All of these experiments were conducted with four hives, and they were alternating between conditions where dances were oriented, so they could use the waggle dance, they could communicate spatial information, and days in which their dances were disoriented. And it turns out that only in this tropical habitat could I find a significant influence of the presence of waggle dance on foraging success, as measured by weight gain of these honeybee colonies. In the other two habitats, there was no significant influence of presence or absence of waggle dances on foraging success. Now, what does this mean? Well, it means that in some conditions, the waggle dance or the spatial communication of food sources, the communication of spatial information about food sources, doesn't seem to be as important as maybe we thought. In some cases, it certainly is important, but in some cases, it isn't. Now, the question is, of course, what is different about India from these other habitats? And one argument would be that maybe in the tropics, food sources are further away or something. I had this discussion with Kirk Vischer. He actually independently repeated almost exactly the same experiment in California. Those were not natural distributions of resources, but he did it over a longer time period. And he also found that in many cases, there was no benefit of the spatial communication. So either way, we conclude that benefits of dances are limited to some conditions, and it remains to be seen what exactly those conditions are. So to summarize that, recruitment to food sources probably helps to allocate workers to foraging and to direct foragers to superior sources, but it may not decrease search time all that much. This also comes from data that Tom Seeley collected a while ago. Spatial information is often not necessary and may be too costly to communicate in the case of bumblebees. And push and pull information transfer serves different needs. Now, just very briefly, I want to give you, like I said, this super brief overview of what we're doing with task allocation and division of labor in bumblebees. So how and why are bumblebees allocated to different tasks? I'm particularly interested in the why. Why is it that some workers do this task and other workers do another task? Of course, in bumblebees, we know that there's a lot of variation in body size, so body size seems to be important. But then when we look more closely, we find all kinds of puzzling things that really don't fit with our general image of what task allocation and division of labor is about. One thing is that there's a bunch of tasks that are the engagement of a worker in these tasks is not explained either by the worker's body size or age. We find that there's an interesting spatial ordering of workers on the nests. Some workers stick to the middle of the nests, others stick to the periphery, but it doesn't perfectly explain task allocation either. Bees may switch from every task to every other task daily. And like I said, there is a lot of size variation between workers, but the small workers, even though they are more likely to care for brood and less likely to forage, so it has something to do with task allocation. In our latest experiment, we are finding that small bees are very bad at both of these things. They're also bad at thermoregulation, as Sean tells me, so it's somewhat of a puzzle why small bees are produced at all. And we're working on that, so maybe next year you can look forward to me talking about small bees. And so lastly, I would like to acknowledge my collaborators with the early bumblebee communication work. Franziska Kluge collaborated with me on the simulations, and then my lab group, Jenny, who already gave a talk on bumblebees at this conference, Tuan, Maggie, Amelie, and the undergrad students who helped collect data. Okay, thank you very much.